Thank you very much for coming, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the conference. Welcome to SharePoint Conference, and hope you've had a good time so far. My name's Kirk Evans. I'm an architect in the Modern Apps Center of Excellence at Microsoft, and we're going to tell you some really, I think, amazing stuff about apps and using Windows Azure and some of the capabilities. Because there's no doubt, Microsoft's all in the cloud. We've heard that loud and clear. And this session is going to show you how to build scalable solutions leveraging those cloud technologies. And that's going to help you achieve business results faster. Our agenda is to start out by introducing you to several cloud patterns you're going to have to account for as you build apps. And you're also going to be introduced to a couple of technologies. And quick show of hands, how many people, this is your first exposure to Azure development? I expected this. Good. All right, you're going to love this session. We're going to go into Azure websites. I've been blogging on this a little bit. I'm going to give you a couple live demos. Then we're going to go into Azure storage and finally web jobs. Cloud computing has kind of three different buckets that you'll hear the industry analysts talk about. Infrastructure as a service, as virtual machines in the cloud. And then software as a service, that's a subscription service where you don't have any infrastructure responsibilities, it's just a subscription such as Office 365. And then in the middle, there's this platform as a service. This is the future. Make no mistake about it, finished services that can be consumed and composed in interesting ways is absolutely the future of computing. And that's exactly what we're going to introduce you to today, is using those finished services that can provide additional value for you to develop on top of to be able to deliver the business results that I talked about previously. So as you start to build apps, you're going to quickly become familiar with a couple of key patterns that are going to drive how you build these apps and how you architect them. The first one is the fact that we have different types of traffic, such as on and off. With on and off, that means that we have traffic that comes in, and then we have a period of inactivity. Accountants are very familiar with this. They get a burst of activity for a short period of time, and then not much activity ramps up again around the fourth quarter of the year, and they're busy, steady throughout the rest couple of months. And then there's growing fast. The new business, they launched a new product, Oprah mentions them as one of her favorite things. And then suddenly it takes off like wildfire and they're faced with a scale problem. Then there's unpredictable bursting. The slash dot effect, this is what we used to call that, where you might write a blog post and suddenly there's 10,000 Microsoft haters that are all talking about your blog post. And you would see something like this, where blogs.msdn.com would go down for a period of time. And then finally, predictable bursting, the things where we're launching a marketing campaign, we know that we're going to expect some additional capacity. And as we have that additional capacity, our applications need to be able to respond accordingly. Every single one of these is going to be addressed through this session. And we're going to show you how Azure uniquely provides the tools for you to build solutions that can meet each one of these situations. Because the cool part is, especially for the on-off scenarios, you only pay for what you use. Now, let's stop and think about how cool that is. If you're running on-premises today, and by the way, there is an S in on-premises at the end. If you hear on-premise from anybody else, you're allowed to go hit them with a sock. You pay for only what you use, because if you're on-premises, remember that if you need that additional scale, the marketing team is going to run over and say, we have so much traffic, we need new web servers. And you're going to have to put in a really big order to a hardware manufacturer, wait on it for a few months, and then provision it. And then the predictable bursting stops. And then you're left with all this additional capacity hardware that goes relatively unused. We're at SharePoint Conference, let's make fun. You have the period of documents that everybody decides to dump everything off their E drive. And everything just shoots into SharePoint. SQL is inundated. You start to scale everything up. And then after that activity is over, you're left with a farm that is way over capacity. We're all familiar with that problem. So Azure allows you to only pay for what you use, enabling you to do things like turn the service off when you're not using it and not incurring additional charge. or just deprovisioning entirely because you no longer need that resource, or scaling up when resources meet a certain threshold. One of the coolest technologies, I think, that has been released from Azure lately is called Azure Websites. It is exactly what it sounds like, IIS in the cloud. That's exactly what this thing is. You will provision your website out to Azure, and it looks and feels just like IIS because in the background it really is just IIS. And you'll be able to deliver your solutions using that. But here's what's also really cool and also unsettling for those people that have been doing this for a long time. Hearing a Microsoft presenter say, we really don't care what language you use. You could use ASP.NET, we love .NET, we think it's great. We use PHP, we think PHP is great too. Runs fantastic on Azure. We also think Python, Node, we think all these are great technologies that can all run on Azure. And recently announced was the ability to run Java as well. Fantastic capabilities. And you can absolutely deploy your solution in seconds. There's not a three-week provisioning clearing where somebody has to review everything before you push out to the cloud. I'm going to show you live. I'm going to push the website several times over today while I add new features and functionality as we build the solution. Oh, wait, and the other one, start for free. This is the other part that a lot of folks may not know. Start for free. With an Azure subscription, you get 10 free websites. Free as in really free. So you get 10 free websites, plus, for those folks who are saying, yeah, but I don't have a database, you get 40 megs of Azure SQL database as well for free. Now, there's going to be some limitations to those free sites, obviously. We're not going to go try to run something like eBay on top of those free sites. So we're going to need to have the ability to scale once demand meets it. So if your application is just launched, absolutely, stay free. Why would you need the additional charge? Because you don't really need the capacity yet. But once you do, you're going to see that scaling is incredibly simple. If you're familiar with Azure, you know that there are a couple of different things to choose from. Yesterday in a talk, I presented on Azure Virtual Machines in the Cloud. And that's really about a virtual machine where you own the operating system and everything on the operating system. But you don't have to worry about the network or the storage layers. So there's a lot of stuff that Microsoft manages for you. And at the opposite side of this is websites. Websites are incredibly easy, but you really don't have access to anything underneath the website. So in the middle is this thing called cloud services. Cloud services, you might have heard as web role and worker role in Azure. And those are really virtual machines that every time your application starts, you'll need to provision whatever resources that you need on those virtual machines. And then once those virtual machines tear down, those resources are deallocated. It means the next time that virtual machine starts, it provisions anything that it needs again. Not a good candidate for SharePoint. You can imagine that would be a really bad thing. So SharePoint would run great on virtual machines, but do we really need the capacity for the cloud services if we're just building apps? I posit no. I really like the capability of using the platform as a service look and feel to the rest of Azure, and I think websites feels to me much more like that. But there are going to be scenarios where cloud services are going to be necessary, things like you need to install some additional open source capabilities. You need some other language that wasn't one of the ones I talked about that runs on websites. So we have the ability for you to do additional things in cloud services. But if we're just building a SharePoint app, websites are absolutely a great idea for that. So to prove that, I have a scenario. I'm using Office 365. And I'm going to build a provider-hosted app. Somebody approached me at the very beginning of the session and asked, am I going to do any server-side code? And I jokingly said, no full trust code at all. Because as developers, we usually think as server-side code means on the SharePoint server. I am doing server-side code. In fact, I'm going to show you all the technologies that we've been begging for years, like ASP.NET MVC. We're going to show you how to do that on the server side, but not on the SharePoint server. We're going to show you how to use the app model. So our scenario is Office 365 is going to interact with our app that's going to be hosted in Azure. And when the app is first installed, we're going to raise a remote event receiver. If anybody has visited my blog recently, you might have seen that I blogged first about how to build an Azure website with an app, and second, about how to do remote event receivers. The entire reason I was doing that was selfish. It was to support this session, because I figured that there's going to be some people that need deeper information as I skim over some of the details. It's all covered in my blog in painstaking detail. So if there's additional information you need about how does a remote event receiver work, please visit blogs.msdn.com/kaevans, and you'll find the information there. What we're going to do in the app is when the app installed event occurs, we're going to reach back into the host web in SharePoint, and we're going to attach an event receiver to a list. And the list is going to be a document library called photos. When an item is added to that list, another event will fire back to our app, and we'll be able to handle that event. My favorite slide. Demo. I apologize in advance. If you are Visual Studio averse, this is the time that you probably would like to go find another session. We're going to code for roughly about an hour. This is a 300 level talk. I expect you to already know the app model a little bit. I'm not introducing the app model. I'm going to introduce Azure development with the app model. So if your expectations are here to learn a 100 level introduction to the app model, there is also time for you to please go find another session and something that would be well suited to your time. If you're here, I expect that you're enjoying the whole Azure stuff that I'm about to unleash on you. So with that, let's get started. Thank you. I'm hearing enough people that are happy about that. I went into Visual Studio and I just did like file new project. And then in here I did Office, SharePoint apps, app for SharePoint 2013. And then went in there and just kind of went next, done. And that generated this ASP.NET MVC project for me. Yes, we have MVC here. You can see that because we have the controllers, we have models, we have services, we have all these neat capabilities here in ASP.NET MVC. If you're not familiar with MVC, don't worry. It's going to look very familiar by the end of this. You're going to see it's very approachable and very easy to understand. I've got an app project here, and that app project is going to prompt me to sign in real quick. So we'll do that and get that out of the way. This is not part of the coding exercise as planned. So we'll go into the app. So if we look at the app, I can go into the app manifest. In the app manifest, you can see permissions. And the permissions that I've asked for are list permissions. I want to manage the list, and I'm using the base template ID 101, which says I want to manage a document library. This app is asking for permissions to manage one document library. Not access to the entire web, not access to the entire site collection, not all site collections through the tenancy. Only one list is all this app needs. Use the minimum set of permissions that your app actually needs. The app is using the app installed event, and I already just showed you that in the picture a moment ago. We're using handle app installed true. When you set this to true in a provider-hosted app, that is going to then, in the web application, we'll zoom down a little bit here, that will, under services, create this thing called an app event receiver. The app event receiver is really just a WCF service that uses this interface, iRemote event service, that supports a method, process event. Passes in some properties about the event. We'll scroll down a little bit and we can see that we can look at things like, what type of event was it? Was it the app installed event? If so, I'll write a method here that says handle app installed. Otherwise, I'll handle an item added event. I probably should have done a little more checking, more due diligence in what type of message it was, but bear with me, this is demo code. I leave this as an exercise to you. So we'll go down here and look at the handle app installed event. Notice that I'm using system.diagnostics.trace.writeline, so we'll be able to see that the handle app installed event actually occurred. I'm going to create a new client context, and this is kind of the boilerplate code that Visual Studio creates for me. Whenever I create the app installed event, I really just copied it and moved it to my own function. We're going to check and make sure the client context isn't null, that the demo gods are with us. And then we're going to go in and look at the web, ask for its lists, get a list by title, and the title of the list will be photos. We're also going to ask it for, give me the list's event receivers. And by asking for its event receivers, I can query what event receivers are already attached to this list. Have I already registered with you? If so, then I don't need to do this again. So that's exactly what this bit of code here does, is check to see, well, if I haven't already done this, then just use the event receiver definition creation information. I love when they name them like this. That we can now go in and look at the, say the event type is item added. This, we can then say, I want to go into the WCF service. Oh, this line of code is actually really cool. So let me call this out real quick. So what we're doing is actually doing WCF. We're just going into the request message, looking at its headers. And in WCF parlance, it uses a to say who is the to, but it might have gone via a different endpoint. This allows routing, and one of the great things that WCF does that nobody ever bothered to learn about. So we'll move on. We're simply going to tell it we want to add a receiver. At this point, absolutely nothing has happened on the server at all. All of these calls have all been batched up locally. We're just telling the client context, here's what we're about to do, until we call execute query. Once we call execute query, it batches all the calls and property setters and everything together and sends that to SharePoint. SharePoint deserializes it and then uses the server-side object model on its side to then affect these same properties. So we just added an event receiver to a list in the host web. All right, so that's cool. Let's go look at our item added. When item added happens, I'm going to have a trace.write line here. Handle item added is all we're going to do. Now, I'm also going to do one little coding trick. I'm going to use this class called token helper. If you know about the app model, you know that we have this token helper class. And token helper allows me to abstract away all the OAuth stuff that I really don't want to have to learn and implement myself. Thank you, Redmond, for actually writing all this for me. Fantastic. So I will go use this method. It's called get realm from target URL. And you can interpret this as give me the ID of the tenant in Office 365. Every single one of you, as you have an Office 365 subscription, you have a tenancy. You have multiple site collections you provision in that tenant. So I could then use this to be able to go to your tenant, giving your URL, and get back a GUID that would say what your ID is. So since I have the ID, I can now use this to separate the data for all of the different tenants that my app is about to work with. Because remember, when you build these apps, you're not building them just for one customer. You're building it once, and it serves lots and lots and lots of customers, hopefully. That's the ideal scenario. So your app is going to need to scale and partition data. And I'm going to show you how to partition the data. So after that, I just grab the properties, but I don't do anything with it yet, because the first thing I want to show you is Azure Websites. Because when I go in here under this new, if you install the Azure SDK, it'll install the tools for you. And when you install the tools, you get a new node inside the Server Explorer that is the Windows Azure node. And there I can see cloud services, service bus, SQL databases, storage, and you can read. So we'll go into websites, and I'll say add new site from Visual Studio. That's hot. SPC385 is the code for this session, and also is the hashtag if you're on Twitter. We'll go in and choose. I've got multiple subscriptions, so I just had to choose a subscription real quick. And then we'll want to choose a location that's either close to you as the developer or close to your customer that you're building the solution for. So I'm going to choose that this particular installation is going to be West US because we're out here. I could use SQL databases. I think you all kind of get T-SQL by now. So I'm not going to use T-SQL at all for this. No SQL databases. I think it's cheating. So I'm going to go back and show you the real way to do this. We're going to say create. When I create this website, it's creating an empty website. There's no code or anything in it. It's just an empty website. It happened that quick. So there it is. There's my site, and I can go to view settings. I'm going to view settings, and since we all love to work in web config so much, They actually extracted that out and let me set a bunch of the web config settings, such as not only logging for the application, give me logging for the IIS server. I want failed event tracing. That should just blow you back for a second. I get failed event tracing from here? Yes, it's that cool. I'm going to use the word cool so many times, I apologize in advance because I'm still waking up to all the possibilities. So let's go in here and just turn all of it on just because I roll like that. Verbose, baby. We're going to go in here and say save. And we could even go down here, and if we want to add connection strings, we could. We can also do app settings. We can add those. I'm going to cheat and not put them here. Another interesting thing is that we can go back here and say, I want to open in management portal. So let's do that real quick. Open this guy up in the management portal. Guy yesterday, whenever I was presenting, got really mad that I pre-recorded my demos. So this one's for him. I'm not pre-recording anything. We're live. You get to see all the little bugs and stuff in my stuff. So here we go. We're going to go to Azure Portal. And as we go to Azure Portal, we open up this website, and now we'll be able to see that first, yes, I've been doing a bit of practicing on it. You're going to see a bunch of bouncy lines that show there's been traffic and a lot of usage on the same website before. It'll basically use the same name of the website and reincarnate it. And once Azure cooperates, see, this is the part that why having pre-recorded videos actually works for you. There you go. So that was all me pushing the data out to the Azure website. And then as I push the data out to the website, let's see, let's go over here to configure. And remember all those neat little things I just did a moment ago, like I went and turned, what did I turn on? Oh, there's something I turned on, application logging. I turned that guy on. Application logging for blob storage, I turned that guy on. I also went down here to detailed error message. I set the level 2 verbose. We should see that somewhere. It's in there somewhere. Oh, there it is. There's verbose right there. So we are able to see those settings. But here's something really cool. Kirk, you're going to push something out to Azure, but now I have no way of knowing what's going on. Oh, that's thank you for saying that. That's a good point. Let me answer that, because now we're going to go here and roll down for developers. You're going to love this. Remote debugging. Isn't that cool? All right, so once you turn on remote debugging, you'll be able to tell it what Visual Studio version are you using. And I can say I'm using Visual Studio 2013, of course. And I hit save, and that's going to go back and make the change to the website. And then I would be able to go to the Azure node, right-click, and say, I want to debug remotely from Azure, but here on my laptop. Yeah. As a room full of developers, I had the same reaction. All right, so let's go back here. And another really cool thing that I can do, I'm going to right-click this guy and say, view streaming logs in output window. I love this one, too, because the reason that this thing is so cool is all those trace write line statements that I've been putting pepper in my code with show up in the console. So it's running out in Azure. It streams out to my console, and I could watch the messages here to make sure my stuff is working. So I don't have to even have a debug session. Okay, so let's right-click and say, download publish profile. If you're not familiar with web deploy, this is just basic web deploy where we're going to download the publish profile, and we'll use this then for our app to be able to push stuff back up to Azure. So I'll right-click and say download publish profile, and then we'll save it, and there it just happened there. I've done it a few times. So we're just going to use that number 4 one right there. And there's one other thing for provider-hosted apps that you're probably going to need to learn very quickly is the concept of client ID and client secret. And I'll show you what I mean. When we go into our SharePoint page, we'll go into underscore layouts 15/app-reg-new.aspx. As you go to app-reg-new.aspx, what that's going to do is provide me the ability to, on just this one SharePoint tenant, too many people said that at once? Say it all the time? One more time? I heard you. I just wanted to hear it, so many people saying it. Okay, so we go to AppRidge New, and we'll go here and we'll generate a client ID, we'll generate a client secret, we'll go and give it a title, awesome demo. and we'll go in here and say we're going to spc385.azurewebsites.net because that's going to be the default domain. You could use your own domain if you wanted to, and you would have to go to Azure, change it from the free to a standard website. I'll show you that in just a moment. When you do that, you can apply your own domain, your own certs, all the fun stuff. I'm not going to hit OK right here. I've already done this part, and I need the ones that I've already generated anyway for the rest of my demo to work. So trust me, I would have hit Create. The next part that we'll do is we've got the publish profile, and I've got the client ID and client secret that I just showed you here. So let's go into my demo folder. You weren't supposed to see this because I forgot to open this part up. There we are. And why I need that, because I'm going to go here. See that part right there? We're going to go there, and we're going to right-click and say Publish. When we go to Publish, it's going to ask us for a profile. Of course, I don't know what that is, but Kirk's going to show you, because we just say New, and Import Publishing Profile. Browse to where we just downloaded that guy, and he was number 4. It really doesn't matter, 1, 2, 3, 4, all of them are actually the same thing. And now it asks us for client ID, client secret. But now you know that you can get that from AppReg New. Or if you're gonna publish to the marketplace, to the store, then you go to the store and you generate the client ID, client secret from there, grab those values, and then put them in this publish wizard here. And what this publish wizard's going to do is it's going to actually take these values and stick them in not only the app manifest, but also the web config. So I'll be able to then take these values, finish, and when I deploy my web project, it's going to do the right thing. Instead of me editing web configs by hand, the web deploy is going to overwrite that as part of the deployment process. So I'll say deploy the web project. Want to see what's going to be pushed out to Azure? Click start preview. It'll determine what are the changes between the Azure website and what's local and show you the difference. And I can see all the different things that were generated. I'll say publish. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that easy for you to publish a website out to Azure. All right, that wasn't the round of applause I was expecting because there's some people in the middle that didn't quite see the value. All right, I'm almost there. Let's go package the app. When I package the app, it asks me, what's the website, what's the ID, and what the world is that? That is telling me it must be HTTPS. Just put an S there, right there. So we say S, finish, and that generates the app package. The app package then replaces the client ID inside the app package, and now I can go back, shift right click, copy as path, go back to SharePoint, and now I've got a developer site collection. And when you create the site collection, it's one of the templates you can choose from. So I'll say new app to deploy. This is called side loading, which means I don't have to push it out to the catalog in order for it to show up here and get installed. So we'll say new app to deploy, and then you'll kind of see this tiny guy hiding right here that says upload it. So we'll go upload it and browse, and I've already saved you the time, and say okay. Yeah, you saw me on there. And now we click deploy. So let's deploy. And what the deploy is doing is now installing the app in my developer site collection. And it comes up and says, oh, I knew about this client ID, client secret thing, this app principle, because you already went to AppReg New and did this. And now I'm asking the user, okay, I know about the app principle, but now, end user, do you trust the permissions that they're asking for? Do you trust them to be able to do things with a list, such as the photos list that we want? Let it approve items in that list and basic information about the users and share its permission with other users, because I accidentally did the app only policy, but I'll need that for another demo, so I'm going to show you that. Click trust it. When I trust it, it's installed. You'll see it shows as installing for just a little while, and then hopefully in just a moment I'll be able to go back here and say apps and testing, and it says installing. Ha, we're done. You ready for it? Should I do it? Anybody trust me? Boom. Thank you. All right, that's cool. Some people that aren't clapping didn't quite understand what happened, I think, so let me show you. Oh, look at that, SPC 385 to AzureWebsites.net. We just went from 365 to Azure off my laptop in front of you. All right, so that part was cool, except for I just talked about one other thing. The developers really hate magic, is I don't like it when I can't see what's going on. So let me see what's going on and see as I go read the streaming log service, can I see what all is happening? Well, let's go uninstall the app first because we have that event receiver that we're trying to get to. So I'm going to say remove. And I'm going to say new app to deploy. And I should say PaaS demo, deploy it again. Do you trust it? Yes, I do. Click trust it. And just a second, we should see, haha, did you see it? Handle app installed was just called. So now I can see all the events roll in as I'm trying to make sure that all the event receivers and everything's working, because I don't really want to have a live debugger while that's happening. I just want to make sure it all worked. Okay, so next one we're going to do. Let's go in and say, all right, now my app has been successful. Let's go look at the website again. Let's say view settings and open in the management portal. I already have the management portal open. I'll save you that time. And when we're here, one of the things we can also do is scale. When we go to scale, we can tell it that first we can choose whether we like free. Of course we love free. Free is good. We could also say shared, which gives us a slightly different experience for being in a shared environment, lower cost, but still it's not the cost of standard, or finally, standard. And standard gives you a couple of things that you don't get with the other two options, such as I could say what sites do I want to be standard? I'm gonna say just this site. And then I can say, what's the instance size? How big do I want it? You don't get that option with the other guys. So we're gonna say small, medium, large. Course large. And now we're going to say we want to set up scale settings for schedule. What? Let's go to set up schedule. Oh my goodness. I want different scale settings for day and night, for weekdays and weekends, a specific time, or even specific dates. I just showed you handling the on-off, the maximum scale, and also the predictable bursting and unpredictable bursting, all within one shot. But wait, there's more. Because now we can also say, I want to scale by a metric. I want to know when CPU spikes on this guy, I want to bump up the instance count. I want to have three instances whenever it's more than this range. Okay, so that's really cool. So I get a lot of traffic really quick. I don't want to have to remember to log into Azure and scale everything up. Scale it for me. Okay, so that's cool. Let's go. I'm going to discard changes so far. I like free. So what I just showed you is the Azure website. I published the code out to Azure. You saw the event receiver fire. You saw streaming. You saw all the capabilities. Now, I haven't written any real code yet, so now let's dive into some code in just a moment. But first, more PowerPoint, because everybody loves the PowerPoint. Let's talk about storage. I made the joke before that you know SQL, right? You know T-SQL. It's a known quantity to you right now. So let's go in and show you the storage abstractions. In Windows Azure Storage, different from T-SQL, SQL Azure is a different animal. For storage, what I'm talking about is these specific things here. First, starting with this concept of blobs. Blobs is that thing that developers call things that they can't quite explain. So it's a binary large object. It's capable of holding a massive amount of data. And we can hold these blobs up to, I think it's a terabyte of size that we can hold in blob storage. We also have drives. And these drives are for the virtual machines that I told you about previously, running virtual machines out in the cloud. We also have this other really cool concept called tables. Tables are kind of like structured storage, almost with NoSQL. So it's not relational. It's storing entities. And we're going to see that that precisely fits our model because we need to store entities specific to various customers, and we really don't need a relational query for what we're about to do. And we also have the ability to do queues. So I can do queues with storage that allow me to, exactly like it sounds, like MSMQ from the old days, it's kind of back in the cloud. So we're going to shoot a message over to a queue, and we're going to see how that works. So here's our scenario, slightly updated. First, I told you about how we got the item added event receiver in there in the first place. Now we're going to see it fire. And as it fires, we're then going to go out to Azure Storage, and we're going to save an entity that we're going to code up real quick called photo location. And then photo location is going to be stored in locations, and then our app is going to be able to retrieve a list of those photo locations back. And as it retrieves a list of those things back, we're also going to be able to return back a single photo location, giving me just a really simple CRUD operation, store something, read a list of them, read one, and I'm going to show you how to code ASP.NET MVC in the process. My other favorite slide, demo. We on? Yeah, we're on. Good. Okay, let's continue where we left off. We're in storage here. Let's go to the Azure Management Portal. And on the Management Portal, you'll see that we have a couple of different things to choose from, and this guy right here is storage. So we just clicked here, storage. When we click that, we can go down to this big, nice little plus sign down here and say new. When you say new, choose quick create, and then give it a URL, such as SPC385store. I can tell it where is it going to be located. I'm going to say West US, and then I'm going to say create the storage account. So that just creates the storage account. We haven't really done anything interesting with it yet. We just create storage. Once we create the storage account, it takes just a moment to create. And while it's creating, I'm going to go start another task, and we'll come back to this in a moment, because it will take a moment. Now, if you're going to code something that's going to go to some back-end store, I would never suggest to put that in your ASP.NET project. I would always say, go put that in a library somewhere. So add new project. Oh, come on. Catch it now. Add new project. Class library. And I'm going to call this PaaS demo data. We'll call it PaaS demo data. That sounds good. Say OK. Now we have PaaS demo data, and we have this class, of course, class one. We'll rename that guy to photo. If you haven't seen me already fat fingering so many of these, no fat jokes, you can see why I like to pre-record sometimes. So we're going to go in here, and in true Microsoft demo fashion, it wouldn't be a Microsoft demo without your first snippet. There you go. Because everybody carries these around everywhere to make your coding life faster. So we're going to go in and say photo location. And this photo location object is going to have an empty default constructor. It's going to have a constructor that takes that realm value I told you about before that every single Office 365 tenant has. And then I'm going to set the property realm. And then these other two properties that have the red squigglies, the partition key and the row key. The partition key allows me to horizontally scale my storage based on the partition. So I can separately partition data according to all the different customers that are going to work with this solution. Why is this so cool? I'm about to show you a bunch of photos that are going to get dumped into this thing. Of course, I want to make sure that all the metadata that's associated with that is partitioned horizontally. Therefore, if I get the one noisy neighbor, I'll be able to go see how bad are they versus the other neighbors and charge them accordingly. Okay, so you can see the red squigglies. We need to fix that. Right click, manage NuGet packages. We're going to go into manage NuGet packages and search for Azure Storage. Come on, Azure Storage, there you are. And when it is Azure Storage, pops up here and tells me to install. So I'll click install. It's gonna ask me, do you really wanna do this? Of course. And that will add all the references, libraries, everything that I need for Azure Storage here. And now, to get rid of those red squigglies, I also need to derive from a type called table entity. And a table entity just says that this will be a serializable class that will be used with storage. And you can see that that is where we get the partition key and row key. The partition key will then say which partition of data the row key will say which row within that entity is the one that we actually want within that container. So the partition key plus the row key uniquely identifies the record. Okay, so now that we have the thing that we're going to serialize into storage, we're going to go in and add a new class. And the class here we'll call, apologies, I want to make sure I get my name right. I haven't had to look at it yet. It is, that's right. Storage repository. Okay, we're going to say okay. So we're going to use a repository that's going to provide me all of the methods to work with that thing. And the thing that we're going to work with will be this guy. He's going to need a constructor. We're not deriving from anything yet. This guy doesn't need anything. This is just all our own methods. And the first thing we'll need is a class that can get me to that storage account that we just started creating in Azure. Let's flip back over and look at the storage account, see if it's done. So I'll look over and see, yes, he's online, SPC 385 store. He's online. So we'll go into here and go to dashboard. And you can see that storage really only has three different things that it's concerned with. You just saw this in the slide, blobs, tables, and queues. We have a URL that we can get to each one. We'll talk about that in just a little bit as well. We can go back and configure it to do things like whether we're going to replicate any of the rights to a secondary geography, that something like replicate the rights over to East US for fault tolerance. I could also say, do I want any monitoring for the blobs, tables, queues? Do I want logging? And I get to see like any of the read requests or write requests or deletes. I can see a log of all this. Okay, so let's go back over here and write lots of code because that one guy is getting up to leave. We're going to right click and I'm going to say using Microsoft Windows Azure Storage. And this class, the storage account, is going to allow us to connect to that storage account. Next, we have this thing, the connection string. The connection string is going to allow me to, from my web application, to be able to talk to Azure using that string. So let's go to storage, because we created it in the portal, but of course it's going to show up here in Visual Studio. So I can say right-click properties. Properties, I can go click on the connection string right here. Oh, come on back. There you are, right, that guy right there. So if you tried to copy this right now, you would see the value as hidden key. That's not quite accurate. So trust me, this will be a time saver for at least 15 minutes, well worth your time. Click this button and then copy and close. Then we're going to go back into the web application, and we're going to tell it what that connection string is. So we're going to store the connection string, not hard code it. We're going to throw it in web config where it ought to be. But I'm going to put it in app settings. I'm not going to put it as an actual connection string. And you'll see why in just a moment. Bless you. Nothing to sneeze at. This is important stuff. Thank you, Andrew Connell, for that joke. Okay, so now we're going to go over. We're going to get the connection string, and what it's going to do is say cloud storage account parse whatever that connection string that was just returned to us. Now we can go in and say we need to get a reference to this locations table. I'll right click and say using Microsoft Windows Azure Storage.table. So we'll do that. Using that. That resolves all the other red squigglies. And now we get storage account, create cloud table client. All we're doing here is creating a client to be able to talk to the table. We're not downloading anything. It's not like an old data set from ADODB way back then. All this is just getting a reference to it, getting the reference to the table, and we're going to call it locations. Then we're going to tell it, create it if it doesn't exist. And then finally, return the table. You don't have to do this. You can ensure that it's already pre-created. You don't have to create it if it doesn't exist, but I really didn't want to have to go in and create one myself. I like the ability to throw it in code. Okay, so now that we've had our locations table and we added that guy in, next thing we're going to do is tell it we need some CRUD operations. Yep. D3, I think. Yes. D3. I want to make sure I'm getting these right. Save the photo location. So what we're going to do is take that class we just created and serialize it. So the Azure SDK to do this, you can see, is ridiculously easy. It's like 3 lines of code. I'm not even sure I could do ADO.net in this few lines of code anymore. So I'm going to say get a reference to the table, insert or replace the location, and then tell the table to execute the operation. I get a result back. I'm not going to do anything with the result. Don't really need it. Okay, so once I've done that, once I've said that I actually have done a save operation, now let's read. Somebody's going to try to write me down because I was using snippets. So here you go. This is for you. You get to watch me type. we're going to pass in a row key. I showed you before where the row key is. There's a partition ID and row key. So we're going to pass the row key in and say get a location by ID. And then from there, we're going to say photo location is equal to new photo location. There you go. And then from there, we're going to say a table is equal to, we're going to use our little get locations table, the one that gets the reference and says create it if it doesn't exist. And then after that, we're going to say table query. And we're going to say we want a table query of photo location. And we're going to say query is equal to new tab. There you go. I don't know about you, but this is painful. let's see. Let's put this on a new line so you can see it, so I don't have to keep adding. We're going to use a dot where clause. In this dot where, we can say that we want to look for a table query and tell it, table query, I'd like you to generate something for me without hitting the insert again. Where'd that happen? There you go. Let's try that one more time. This is why I pre-record demos, ladies and gentlemen. Table query, we're going to ask it, please, I want you to generate a filter condition. And the filter condition that I'd like you to create will be based on the item in the entity called row key, not row key. And then once we have the row key, I'd like you also to be able to check to see the query comparisons. There I have a dot. I do code faster than this at home, in case you're wondering. Query comparisons dot. And I want to tell it equal. So I want to look for something where it actually equals this, and the value is going to be the row key that was passed in. So we're going to say look for the value that was just passed in, and then after that we're going to ask it for some results. Var results is going to equal to table, please execute the query, and we're going to pass the query object in, and then from there we're going to tell it to return results dot first or default, because we only want one. We just learned how to query. Where did I miss a semi? Oh, right there. Thank you. I'd throw you a shirt, but I'm out. Okay, so next one we're going to do. Okay, enough of me typing. Hopefully you all get why I'm using snippets now, right? All right, there we go. No more of that snippets. No, none of that. So we're going to D5, because all the code that I just told you is basically the same thing in this method that I just snippeted. Get locations for tenant. And this get locations for tenant method here, we're going to pass in the realm. And then the rest of this is the exact same code I just coded. We're going to tell it generate a filter condition based on the realm property, saying query comparisons equal, again, to the value that was passed in, the realm. We're going to execute the query, and then we're going to then check to make sure that something was actually returned, and then we're going to use toList that will generate a list of those photo location objects. All right, so that's cool. So we have the ability to get a single one, get multiple, and to write. So since we have the ability to do all of this now, we're going to say save. Now let's go use our little data library. Let's go into the app event receiver here. And in the app event receiver, I want to have some code to write to storage. So we'll do D7. And the connection string that I'm going to use will use Cloud Configuration Manager. Cloud Configuration Manager is going to allow me to ask Azure did somebody overwrite the settings there in the management portal, or are there any app settings that are already defined in the config, and then use the value from app settings. This is why I didn't put the connection string in the connection string section. I put it in app settings because I'm using this method to be able to return. So I'm going to use that, and notice I'm getting red squigglies all over the place. When I added the reference, I added it to the library, but now I have to add it to, I need to also add it to the process that will actually use it. So I'm going to do Azure Storage one more time. And thankfully, it goes faster this time because I've already hit accept, so it has a lot of the stuff cached. There we go. Yes to all. And now we're going to using Microsoft Windows Azure. And we also have a reference to our storage repository. So we're going to go to References, and we're going to right-click and say Add Reference. And that will go just to our library to PaaS demo data. OK, so now we have the ability not only to call Azure Storage objects, because I have that public class, that photo location is public, which derives from the Azure Storage library. That's why I need the Azure Storage reference here in the web project. So I'm going to go out and get the setting for the connection string, pass it into our repository, get the locations for the tenant, and now I'm going to return back this view. And he's saying view is a type, but use like a variable. I'm sorry? I can't hear. Oh, thank you. Handle, because we don't need that. Handle item added. Kirk. Remember that code I just wrote? D6. That's the one we needed.
Sorry.
Jeremy wrote a blog on this, by the way. You got to be careful which one of these that you were to do. So I'm going to do get the realm, get the properties, and from there I'm going to new up a photo location. The photo location, I'm going to create a new one based on the realm. I'm going to just grab the list ID, the list item ID, and the web URL from the item added event. Then I'm going to get the connection string, go to our repository, and save the location. And you just saw me write that code just a moment ago. This is the one I actually wrote. And now we're going to go back here. Now that we've actually written some code that saves something on item added, let's go back to our controllers. And under controllers, we're going to home controller. And in home controller, I can add some code here. So whenever the controller is called, it's going to call this index method. And I want to give it some code to actually to be able to actually call. And this was the code that I just did a moment ago. Remember this that I just did? The one that returns the view model, because that one is not there. And we need a reference to the storage repository. That's this guy. And Cloud Configuration Manager. He needs a reference. And we're all good. So we go back, get the setting, storage repository, get all locations for tenant in the controller. And that'll just return all of them. So this is what the index controller does in MVC, is returns a list of things. But you also need a view that will show that data. So let's go back to views and see what Visual Studio creates for us. And in the view that it creates for us is all this apps for SharePoint, marketing, marketing, marketing. Delete. Yes. And the reason I just deleted this is because I love this concept called scaffolding. Add view. And the view, I will call it index, because that's the one that we just used. The template will be a list, and the model class will be our photo location class that we've been using. Index is the view, template will be a list, and the model class will be that. And when I add, what it'll create is all of this stuff for me to iterate over all of the different items and show me all of the different properties of them, and show me how to display each one in the correct format. But this one I don't quite like. So I'm going to say image. The source is going to equal to whatever is the at item. So let's do server side item. And now we get IntelliSense, and I can tell it I want the blob URL. So let's do that, dot blob URL. And then we can say the height is 100. The width is 100, and there we go. So now I just did the item URL here. I'll just cut, copy, paste, because now we're going to do the same little trick. I don't need edit. I don't need delete. But I do want to be able to click on details to go to a details page. So I can go back and uncomment this code here and this code here and tell it, I want to pass from this guy, I'd like to pass the unique the thing that uniquely identifies this guy, which is the row key. Save, build solution, and he builds. So the reason I'm going to do that is now I'm going to go in and look at my controllers one more time. And I do have a controller that I started called details. And in details, I'm going to SP context, get the realm, and then I'm going to tell the view bag, here's the host URL, and then I want some code to view a single item. So for this one, we're just going to use the connection string, use the storage repository, and get a location by its ID. And the ID that we'll use will be the ID that was passed in, which will be the row key. So we'll save. I just showed you pretty quickly, even though I was using snippets, still, if I coded it, it would have been a lot slower. So let's go in and publish. Because we don't have to do any of that SharePoint stuff anymore, because we've already added the app. So now we just redeploy the project out to Azure because we made incremental changes to add value to our application. So what we should be able to see now is right-click this guy and say, I want to stop viewing logs. Let's start that guy up again one more time. Publish succeeded. Let's go look at the Azure site. And let's go to the photos list. And I want to turn on streaming. There we are. Open view streaming logs because we want to see that. I'm going to clear everything. And now we're going to go back here, go to photos, new document. I'm going to go upload an existing file, browse. I'm going to go to pictures, images. You can see I've been testing this a few times. Open, okay. So what this is going to do is add an item into the document library. Item event receiver, the remote event receiver for item added fires. Fires that across over to my Azure website. Azure website picks it up and then is going to write through all the stuff that we just did, creating a table in Azure Storage, is going to then write the data for the event receiver into the Azure Storage. And now what I should be able to do is, as I click on PaaS Demo, it'll take me over to Azure website, and I'll be able to see that all the work that we just did with ASP.MVC paid off. That, yes, thank you, that's very cool. All right, thank you. All right, next one. Let's go and show you what actually happened, because if I go in here, we can expand and see blobs, tables, queues. So let's go into tables, and then we go into tables. There's the locations table that was created. I go click on the locations table, and there's the data. Thank you, Visual Studio. Look at how cool that is. Yeah, so all right, so that was cool. Let's go back to PowerPoint for just a little bit, because that got us through table storage. Now we're going to go back in. Worth the price of admission so far? Yes, good. All right. Web jobs. This is so cool. I can't tell you how many times that I've worked with customers that have a console app. And this console app usually runs as a Windows schedule process. And they have everybody's nodding. Yep, coded one this week. Yeah, we have console apps all over the place that do critical work for our companies. So wouldn't it be cool if we had that same ability to take those old legacy console apps and push them to the cloud and do the work out there? It's exactly what web jobs are going to do for us. Web jobs are built on top of websites. So you'll know that we have a couple of options for scheduling. We have a scheduler service that we just announced recently. We also have the ability to do this thing called Azure Batch, which allows, it's kind of, if you look at it funny, it does scheduling. We also have mobile, which also has a component to it, which is scheduling. So what we're going to do is web jobs, which can be a scheduled process, but has a couple of other benefits to it. It can respond to queue messages, or if something enters blob storage, it can also fire the web job off. So that's exactly what we're going to do, is we're going to use a web job. And I'm going to use a console app in Visual Studio, but you don't have to just use that. You can use any of these different types. You can use a command, bat file, executable. You can use PHP, Python. You can even use JavaScript, because I've heard, as everybody loves the app model, we're all fans of JavaScript in this room, right? JavaScript, but it's not just client-side JavaScript, it is using Node. So you have the ability to use any of these, so if you have these other processes that you run with any of these languages or types, you'll be able to use that as well. Let's expand our scenario visually. Item added happens. Item added, you saw me store something into locations. From there, our event receiver will do one additional bit of work. We're going to shoot over to the jobs queue, and we're going to create a queue called jobs, and we're going to shoot a message to it and say it's going to be the partition key and the row key concatenated together so that we can uniquely identify the record. From there, we're going to then take our console application running in the cloud. We'll pick it up off of queue, do some cool processing, such as reach back into SharePoint to go download the picture that I just showed you a moment ago, do some additional processing to it, and then overlay some image and text on top of it to be able to then save that back to blob storage. Sounds like a lot, but we've actually already done the work because we moved everything to a library. So let's go back here. All right, we're in Visual Studio still. This is good. All right, the next thing we're going to do is I have the console application already. So I'm going to say add existing project. Because we just talked about the scenario is that you have the existing console application. And my console app is kind of shelled out a little bit. Let's see. Go into Program CS. You can see there's my class program, static void main. And I have a method process queue message, and it's going to do some stuff to look in the partition key, row key, use our new storage repository, and it's going to do some other stuff. To use all that, remember, the first thing we had to do was we have to go into manage NuGet packages, and we're going to use Azure Storage. And we're going to use that guy, and he's going to find it, and we need to add that here. And a little check mark says you're already installed. That's good. Next thing we're going to use is going to be Azure, and if you look for Azure Job Host. Azure Job Host is the guy that is the Web Jobs SDK distributed through NuGet. And that Job Host is going to allow me to, where is it? Pre-release is right there. Include pre-release. Space between job and host. Wouldn't this be funny? Windows Azure, Microsoft Windows Azure Job Host. All right, back to the notes real quick. Apologize for this one. I can't believe I just did that. it is Microsoft Windows Azure. Oh, watch this. Microsoft.WindowsAzure.Jobs.Host. Discoverable at its best. So we're going here and say install. And we'll say accept. And that will, again, add all the dependencies and everything that I need. Remember that I'm also using client-side object model code. Shouldn't have hit that. We'll go to manage NuGet. And you can now, this one's actually really easy to find, SharePoint app. If you go down to SharePoint app, you know all that token helper stuff? Token helper stuff is actually even distributed through NuGet. So you can go back and add this guy to your project so that I add all the token helper and everything else for your project. So that'll allow you to do where everything is already set to copy local equals true and everything. Just add it in there, you're good. All right, so now that we have all of that code written, let's turn this guy into a web job. We're going to call it job host, and he's going to ask me, what is a job host? Using Microsoft Windows Azure .jobs. Host is equal to new job host. All right, that's easy enough. Now let's go to host dot, and now we can tell it either run in block, which says basically continually run, or I can tell it to run on a background thread. I can even thread multiple of these guys at once to do multi-threaded processing if I want to, but we're just going to tell it run in block. Run in block. Okay? When it says run in block, what it's going to do is call this process queue message method here, and the way that it's going to know to do that is we're going to add an attribute right here. And that's called queue input. And for queue input, we're going to tell it that the name of the queue to look at is jobs. So when something is dropped in that queue, the Azure queue for storage, it's then going to pick that up and process it through this method and then call all the rest of my code. Let's see, Let's add a reference to our project. Demo data, we'll say OK. And that guy should now resolve. He's good. He's happy. There's one more I need to do, and that's going to be this guy down here, because we're going to do something with a stream is good. Let's build real quick. Is everybody happy? Build failed. Does not for save image blob. Oh, because we haven't done some blob code yet. Let's go do that real quick, because I didn't show you how to code the queue stuff or the blob. So let's go back to our library, because we're going to need that stuff. Let's go back to our repository. And our repository, remember right now, we're just working with table storage. We can also work with queues and blobs in storage as well. So for the queues and blobs, we're going to do, I'm reading it, because I'm making sure I don't do that trick again. D9, which is send photo to location queue message. So what this guy is going to do is say, I want to take that photo location object and shoot it over to a queue message. And now I need to use the same type of coding that I did before, the cloud queue client and a cloud queue and a cloud queue message. All of these guys, I need to resolve these guys, so resolve using. And I have another method here, the last one, which is save image blob. And this guy's a little more involved. Resolve this. So he's going to, same pattern, create the client, get a container reference, create the reference if it doesn't exist, and then we're going to set some permissions. I'm going to say it is publicly accessible, so it shows up on my website. Then I say set permissions. I'm going to tell it that I also want to get a block blob reference using the row key concatenated with PNG. The file image is going to be called rowkey.png. I'm going to upload it from a stream. Stream says resolve system.io. We're going to set the content type, set the properties again, and then finally, we need to update the photo location object with the URI or the URL for the blob itself. We're going to save all this. Let's go to our event receiver. And our event receiver is going to need to do something with that as well, because he's going to need to actually send the photo queue message. And now, since we've done all the hard work already, we just tell it, send the location out to the queue. Okay, so now we have the console app, we have our event receiver on item added, we'll queue up the message, and then our console application will be able to pick it all up. Before I do that, let's push this, publish, deploy your web project. Publish, takes just a moment, we move all of our changes out to the cloud, and then we can now, because it's a console app, and I've been smart enough to already update all of the app config stuff, I wasn't, let me show you how to do that one more time. Go here to the connection string, copy the connection string, go to, there's a couple of connection string changes we're going to need. Because this web job stuff uses two values that it requires. The first one is called Azure Jobs Data. The second one is Azure Jobs Runtime. It doesn't have to be the same storage account. This one just says, where's the stuff going to live and where's my log data going to go? So they don't have to be the same storage account, but I have just one that I'm using. So I'm going to, for my purposes, that's fine. I'm going to overwrite all of these. I could have overloaded this somehow, but it's probably safer to just, I'm going to make sure that I pasted it. I think I did. That would be bad. Okay. So now I've updated the connection strings. But remember, this console application is still using the WebJobs SDK. That means I don't have to push it out to the cloud yet. I can just right-click and say debug, start new instance. And what that's going to do is allow me to listen for any queue messages. So let me go back to here. You know what? Smile. Let's try this. Give you a memento at the end of the day. All right, I'm going to go back to my desktop. I know you can't see this. You want me to turn around? I'm going to go to the photos list, and I'm going to say new document and upload existing file, and I'm going to browse, and I'm going to look for that image. So let's go to pictures, and I'm going to go to camera roll, and come on, camera roll, pop open, and there it is, open. Say OK. And why this is cool is because you're going to be able to see it here in just a moment. If I go back to the site, I can see that a message just popped open here. Isn't that cool? All right, the console app locally, yeah. And it figures out that there is a message in the queue, And it picks it up, and it does a bunch of processing. So we'll go back to this SharePoint site. We'll go look at photos. Here's the photo that I just opened. I'll say OK. Everybody's smiling for me. So now I can go back here and say, Paz demo, tell me everything worked. Click on it and say, ha-ha. You can see the picture just showed up here. It's finished processing for the web job. Go to the details link. What did I do? It doesn't matter, because you know that that image is there, because I can go back to blobs. And as I go to blobs, I can go to images. And as I go to images, I can open it up and show all the nice people here as well, that as I double click and open, that it will, come on, it will show the picture back on the site. There you go. You already saw it once, so I'll just show you. We just got a little bit of a hiccup at the end. So what you just saw, to me, is just frankly amazing. We just scaled this by, wait, that's not even the picture I was trying to get to. You know what? One last try. Let's go back here. I'm not willing to give this one up. Copy the URL. Let's go back here and paste the URL. There it is. I overlaid SPC385, which is a hashtag for the session, as well as a SharePoint conference logo. And what I'm going to do with this at the very end of the session, I'm going to take this, copy it to my blog. The entire session that you just saw, I wrote up as another blog post this morning. You'll have every detail, all of the source code, and descriptions on how every single part of this works. Oh, thank you. So with that, I want to wrap up. You can get started for free. If you aren't convinced now, I don't know what else I could have done. If you have MSDN, you already have Azure. You get up to $150 per month of Azure credits. If you have MSDN and you aren't using your Azure, you are literally throwing money away. If you don't have MSDN, there's also a free one-month trial. You get $200 to use as you need, and it lasts for 30 days. Some related content, I have some sessions. SPC 298, I delivered yesterday. SPC 3992, on Thursday, I'm going to talk more about Azure Virtual Machines. And then some developer sessions here that I highly recommend. And then finally, some links. SDKs, tutorials, docs, some blogs. I've written a few, and you'll see that Scott Hanselman and the Web Jobs team have written some really cool ones as well. The sessions that I have again, I'm doing the one with lovely Brenda Carter on Thursday. And there's also some other sessions that I would additionally recommend. There's one by Mr. Jeremy that's sitting right here up in front. I highly recommend him as a presenter. And also, Eden is doing one on highly scalable SharePoint apps. We just released, if you haven't seen this, this was a lot of hard work. We just released to CodePlex, officeams.codeplex.com, common customization patterns using the app model that shows you how to do the same kind of stuff you used to do with full trust code, how to do those complex scenarios with the app model. Calls to action, explore the new APIs, connect with the community, build using our tools. Please give me fives. I worked so hard on this. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Enjoy the rest of the conference.